Flynn suggests that Matthew's desire to fulfill messianic prophecies, descent from David, birth in Bethlehem, for the benefit of Jewish readers, came into headlong collision with Luke's desire to adapt Christianity for the Gentiles, and hence to press the familiar hot buttons of pagan Hellenistic religions, virgin birth, worship by kings, etc. The resulting contradictions are glaring, but consistently overlooked by the faithful. Sophisticated Christians do not need George Gershwin to convince them that the things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. But there are many unsophisticated Christians out there who think it absolutely is necessarily so, who take the Bible very seriously indeed as a literal and accurate record of history and hence as evidence supporting their religious beliefs. Do these people never open the book that they believe is the literal truth? Why don't they notice those glaring contradictions? Shouldn't a literalist worry about the fact that Matthew traces Joseph's descent from King David via 28 intermediate generations, while Luke has 41 generations? Worse, there is almost no overlap in the names on the two lists. In any case, if Jesus really was born of a virgin, Joseph's ancestry is irrelevant and cannot be used to fulfill, on Jesus' behalf, the Old Testament prophecy that the Messiah should be descended from David.
The American biblical scholar Bart Ehrman, in a book whose subtitle is The Story Behind Who Changed the New Testament and Why, unfolds the huge uncertainty befogging the New Testament texts. In the introduction to the book, Professor Ehrman movingly charts his personal educational journey from Bible-believing fundamentalist to thoughtful skeptic, a journey driven by his dawning realization of the massive fallibility of the scriptures. Significantly, as he moved up the hierarchy of American universities from rock bottom at the Moody Bible Institute through Wheaton College, a little bit higher on the scale but still the alma mater of Billy Graham, to Princeton in the world-beating class at the top, he was at every stage warned that he would have trouble maintaining his fundamentalist Christianity in the face of dangerous progressivism. So it proved, and we, his readers, are the beneficiaries. Other refreshingly iconoclastic books of biblical criticism are Robin Lane Fox's The Unauthorized Version, already mentioned, and Jack Berliner Blau's The Secular Bible, Why Non-Believers Must Take Religion Seriously. The four Gospels that made it into the official canon were chosen, more or less arbitrarily, out of a larger sample of at least a dozen, including the Gospels of Thomas, Peter, Nicodemus, Philip, Bartholomew, and Mary Magdalene. It is these additional Gospels that Thomas Jefferson was referring to in his letter to his nephew.
I forgot to observe, when speaking of the New Testament, that you should read all the histories of Christ, as well of those whom a council of ecclesiastics have decided for us to be pseudo-evangelists, as those they named evangelists, because these pseudo-evangelists pretended to inspiration as much as the others, and you are to judge their pretensions by your own reason, and not by the reason of those ecclesiastics.
The Gospels that didn't make it were omitted by those ecclesiastics, perhaps because they included stories that were even more embarrassingly implausible than those in the four canonical ones. The Gospel of Thomas, for example, has numerous anecdotes about the child Jesus abusing his magical powers in the manner of a mischievous fairy, impishly transforming his playmates into goats or turning mud into sparrows, or giving his father a hand with the carpentry by miraculously lengthening a piece of wood.
A.N. Wilson, in his biography of Jesus, casts doubt on the story that Joseph was a carpenter at all. The Greek word tekton does indeed mean carpenter, but it was translated from the Aramaic word nagar, which could mean craftsman or learned man. This is one of several constructive mistranslations that bedevil the Bible, the most famous being the mistranslation of Isaiah's Hebrew for young woman, alma, into the Greek for virgin, parthenos. An easy mistake to make. Think of the English words maid and maiden to see how it might have happened. This one translator's slip was to be wildly inflated and give rise to the whole preposterous legend of Jesus' mother being a virgin. The only competitor for the title of champion constructive mistranslation of all time also concerns virgins. Ibn Warraq has hilariously argued that in the famous promise of 72 virgins to every Muslim martyr, virgins is a mistranslation of white raisins of crystal clarity.